League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
You are listening to the Manchester City Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. Delighted to say I'm joined in the studio with the Man City Show podcast, Nigel Rothband, and once again, the returnee, Sarah Messenger. Sarah, thank you for blessing us with your presence. I've had to deal with Nigel for 2 weeks in between. I've got to say, it's been tough. It's been tough, I can't lie. No, of course it's not, Sarah. I'm delighted you're here. Nigel, always a pleasure to see you. But I've got to be honest, you may think the international break, well, the real football's gone, no game for us to talk about with City. It couldn't be further from the truth, because we're going to be talking about Man City's season so far. And obviously the fallout with Sterling and Gomez, City may be dominating that international break. And, you know, one guest, this is great to get on the City show tonight. And we've got David Walker from Red But Never Red, but we thought let's get two. So we got also hearing from Dave Wallace. I'm really excited this from the City Van Scene. He's going to be joining us at 9:30. You ain't going to want to miss that. And we thought, let's get the hat trick. We're also going to be hearing from Kenny Swain, ex-Chelsea. Delighted to have him on the show, because it's a big one on the weekend. City need the points. We're talking about the title race. We're going to be talking about the season so far. Well, it's Chelsea on the weekend. Six wins on the bounce for them in the Premier League. Kenny will be joining us to give us his take. 5:30 is the kickoff this Saturday. But more than that, more than Nigel, you can have your say tonight. Tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us 0208 7020 558. I'm kidding, of course. It's brilliant to have Nigel and Sarah in the studio. Well, before we get to Man City season so far, you thought a nice week off, international break, Sarah. You know, I can Man City are in the rearview mirror. Let's just let the boys go on their international duty. Literally, after me and Nigel finished the show last week, it all came out with Sterling. We're talking about it, and just what did you make of it? Because one half, you know, Sterling, he's admitted he's in the wrong. He's tweeted he's in the wrong. And Joe Gomez, please don't boo him. And then the other half, we've had pundits, and I know you maybe we won't talk about him a lot, but Roy Keane, he actually stuck up for Sterling, said, I feel a little bit sorry for him. He's been hung out to dry by Gareth Southgate. Gareth Southgate should have kept this in-house, and it should have been a problem he dealt with internally. Where do you sit on it, Sarah?
I think it should have been kept in-house. From a City fan's point of view, there's nothing you want more than to see the kind of passion that I think drove this. So, and you could see it in the match against Liverpool as well. There was a bit of a spat there, obviously carried over to England. You know, probably grabbing somebody by the throat and scratching them under their right eye is not the most sensible thing to do. But I see it much more as being driven by the fact that Sterling cares. I suspect there was a bit of winding up going on as well. He shouldn't have reacted like that. He's apologised for it. But this has been blown out of all proportion. I think it's ridiculous how it's become this sort of major news story. And I know it's about, you know, getting clicks or getting people interested in subjects. We're talking about it now, so you know we're all doing it. But I think it's been blown out of all proportion. It's probably a reasonably common occurrence in quite a lot of dressing rooms, or quite often a lot of ex-England players have said it happens quite a lot, and well, it's silly.
Yeah, training ground bust-ups, training ground melees, sports people are competitive at their nature, you know, regardless of what sport it is. They're in an intense Premier League race. I felt like it maybe bubbled over. It wasn't just Gomez. He was sort of having a go between a set two with Trent Alexander-Arnold on the weekend. You know, and Gareth Southgate's always tried, hasn't he? He said, look, the Premier League rivals don't come into it. But it does show what it means to them. You know, Raheem Sterling, he wanted to have his say. Nigel, what did you make of it all?
Well, the thing is, Charlie, we don't actually know what went on, do we? To be honest, that's, you know, we can speculate. And as Sarah quite rightly says, you've got a situation where this happens in sports clubs up and down the country, across the world, competitive players, and it does happen, and we know it happens. The pros have come out and said this. What I'm concerned about is that Gareth Southgate decides to ban him for one game, but then he stays with the camp, and he's there training and having a laugh with everybody, which seems strange to me. He then has a press conference and literally says nothing at all. So he doesn't share anything about the incident itself. He says nothing about the senior players who were involved, nothing about the conversations that have taken place, nothing. Every time he was questioned about it, nothing. But what he was willing to do was say, but I have banned him for a game. Mm-hmm. So he's either keeping this behind closed doors or he's not. So you either come out and say, this is what's happened and this is the punishment, or you keep it behind closed doors and say nothing. I think he's fallen between two stools. And actually what's happened is I don't think anybody comes out of this particularly well. Southgate doesn't come out of it very well. Sterling doesn't. Gomez hasn't, of course, because we saw what happened when he was came on as a substitute the other day. I don't think anybody's come out of it very well at all. I think the whole thing's been handled very, very badly.
And would you pinpoint that, and that's solely down to Gareth Southgate then, if we're talking about the way it's been handled?
Yeah, because these things happen. Absolutely. In my view, absolutely. Mm. I think it's either, this is what's happened, come out, tell people, and ban him properly, send him home. You know, if he thinks it's a serious event, send him home and get rid of him, you know, if that's what he thinks. But to only tell us a very small part of the story, I don't think it helps anybody.
Mm. It was weird because I watched the game. Obviously, we do the City fan show, and I watched the City-Liverpool game. And it's funny because it's all this storm has come about Sterling and Gomez. But there was one incident in the game when the ball went out for a goal kick or a corner, and Trent Alexander-Arnold pushed Sterling, and Sterling had a little word with him. And I said at the time, I went, that's really weird. They're going to be on England duty. And I know, look, you know, they're going at it, you know, 100%. They're fully invested in this game. It's Liverpool versus Man City. But they are England teammates, and I thought that push was a little bit late. I thought Raheem's got a right to be like, hey, come on, Trent, you know, that was a bit uncalled for. Obviously, in the end, he had a bit of fisticuffs with Gomez, but I just thought he's got a point, and, you know, rightly so, you know, in all lines of work. The next day, we don't know what happened, so we have to speculate, but Raheem, to a certain degree, he's got a right to say, you was bang out of line there, Joe, Trent. I thought what you did there, maybe he went a little bit more firmer stance than I just said it. But, you know, he's got a point, hasn't he, Nigel?
Well, he has. I think what I would come back to talk about is Sterling, if I can, because I think, as a City fan, I would, of course. And I think when I say he hasn't been helped by this, we have to remember that Sterling came back from the Euros and was kind of almost single-handedly blamed for England's lack of success at the Euros. He's been racially abused as an England player, he's been racially abused as a Man City player, and he's risen above all of that, and I think he's dealt with that superbly and has had some fantastic press. I think this has not helped Sterling at all, and that's what worries me, that all that good work that the lad's put in over all of those years in getting himself his reputation back, and as I say, he's risen above it all. He's taken terrible abuse from fans across the world. And, you know, how is this going to impact on him? How is this going to affect him? I'm not sure, and I'm concerned about that, I think. That's my worry.
Yeah, I was, because I always, you know how fond I am of Raheem, especially on the show. I always talk him out. I think he's a real leader. I think he's a role model for aspiring young kids who want to play football. I think he's matured. I think the work he does now and in the community is absolutely brilliant. But only over social media and talking to people I know. I was quite surprised. I thought Raheem come out of it really well, because I've got to admit, I know it's the Man City show, but all my Arsenal mates are going, I wish we had a player like Sterling. See how much he cares. You see how much he cares. And then everyone going, fair play to him. I wish we had, you know, the players that we had in the past. It carries over, you know. They don't just want to pick up their paycheck. And then obviously the booing of Gomez. I think fans, you know, even, and we're saying it, pundits coming out going, Southgate shouldn't have done that to Sterling. I think, you know, fans were quick to defend Sterling. Did it feel like that, Sarah?
I'm with you. I'm not sure I completely agree with Nigel that I think this is damaging to Sterling. I mean, you know, time will tell. But
the booing of Gomez is the biggest evidence, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I you know, I think at the end of the day, ideally it shouldn't have happened. Although, interestingly, you know, somebody who coaches a women's football team, the rule about what goes on in the dressing room doesn't get outside, and you never show your opponents that there's any kind of dissent in the camp, interestingly, didn't seem to apply to England. But I think that Sterling has dealt with it pretty well, actually. He apologised. He was seen clapping in the stadium on Thursday. He reacted to the booing of Gomez. I think he's probably, actually, ironically, done himself some good out of all of this.
Yeah, I do have to agree. And obviously, again, very mature response. He'd already tweeted his apologies, tweeted again after the Gomez booing, said, look, you know, root for Joe, you know, don't do this to him. I think it shows what a leader Raheem is. I think Southgate has actually copped the most from this fallout. I don't know if he's done well, but I've robbed you cruelly of this first section. Obviously, it was the breaking news over the international break. Let's quickly talk about now. Let's forget that. It was a storm in a teacup. Let's talk about the season so far. Many highs, many lows. We've covered them notably on this show. City find themselves, you know, just falling slightly behind in that title race. But the season so far, Nigel, as a whole, as we, you know, finally have the last international break of this calendar year. Thank you, please, never come back. Correct. What have you made of it so far?
Well, it's been mixed, hasn't it? I think we have to understand this is coming on the back of two amazing seasons. You know, record-breaking seasons, both of them, the Centurions, winning back-to-back titles. It was always going to be tough. I think if you then kind of think, well, what's happened? And I guess one of the most significant factors is company going and him not being replaced. And that's easy with hindsight. At the time, of course, we were saying, well, we've got loads of cover, we've got Laporte, we've got Otamendi, we've got Stones, we've got a number of full-backs who can also play at centre-back, so it's not going to be a problem. But, of course, once Laporte picked up his injury, it does mean we've kind of been playing, sort of shuffling the pack with that back four kind of ever since, really, because Zinchenko's been injured as well, Rodri's been injured, David Silva's had an injury. It seems strange, doesn't it? With a club like Manchester City and a podcast dedicated to Man City talking about injuries and that having impact with the bottomless pit of money that we seem to have. But it has affected us. So I think that's a factor. I think the other thing I would say very quickly also, and I'm keen to hear what Sarah's got to say, is that we probably haven't been firing on all cylinders. We've been scoring goals. We've scored a lot of goals, but there have been certain games where we've kind of been misfiring up front as well. So it's you've got players like Bernardo Silva, like Kevin De Bruyne, who, all right, De Bruyne didn't play much last year, but in the games he played, he was absolutely fantastic. So they just haven't been kind of coming off quite like they did last season. So I think it's a whole combination of things. And at the same time, of course, Liverpool have improved as well, of course. And they go from strength to strength, and they don't look like losing at the moment. So it looks tough. So I think a whole combination of things. Listen, a load of football to be played still. We're not out of it yet. Yeah, we're in fourth place, but big game coming up this weekend that we'll talk about, and I think we'll be back on track.
Yeah, huge game this weekend. It'll be a very exciting next week show on Monday. But Sarah, obviously mentioning the highs, mentioning the lows, what has it been for you this year?
Well, I think Nigel's hit the nail on the head with a number of reasons why it's kind of not been quite as smooth as it's been in the previous two seasons. I think the point he makes about the on the back of two really brilliant seasons is really important. I mean, even when the team that play in red and come from somewhere near Manchester were winning quite a lot of trophies and Premier League titles in the 90s and noughties, they didn't, you know, they. I think they did it once where they won three in a row. A few times they did too. But, you know, even they weren't able to sustain winning it year after year after year after year. So there is something about the mental effect of always having to push yourself to win something when you've just done it. We know that Liverpool are desperate, and that mental effect, I think, probably is working a little bit in their favour this season more than ours. Then when you throw in the other things that Nigel's mentioned, the injuries, and particularly Laporte, I mean, it's totally... It's not only caused disruption at the back, it's taken away, I think, a sense of security that's important in any team. Everyone says you don't win titles without a decent defence. And you take Laporte out of there, and I think, I suspect even subconsciously, that the team know that they're weaker at the back, and that has then impacted on the way they're attacking. So we've had some brilliant attacking performances. Watford would be an obvious one. But there's not been quite the ruthlessness in attack that we've seen in the previous two seasons. And I just think there's something about the impact of Laporte.
I mean, Sarah's right. You know, 35 goals in 12 league games is the stat that I was struggling to remember, which is phenomenal. So I think, you know, we clearly, if you talk about the highs...
And yet we're talking, sorry, Nigel, to interrupt, but you and Sarah both saying we're not firing on all cylinders, you said. Sarah said we're not clinical in front of goal, but that stat is astounding.
Well, it is. But when you think about it, we've lost to Norwich and we've lost to Wolves and we've lost to Liverpool and we only drew against Spurs. Now, you could argue that Spurs game, and we go into that with VAR, we were fantastic that day. Mm. We played brilliantly. But we were very poor against Norwich. We were very poor against Wolves. Didn't deserve to win either of those games. And, of course, Liverpool, we talked about very, very recently. So, you know, we hadn't lost three and drawn one at this stage last season. So there's something not quite right. I think there's one other thing I'd add, if I may. And I mentioned company, and I don't think we realise the leadership that he brought to that dressing room. Even when he wasn't playing, there's no question he brought something to that dressing room that I think we're missing. And the sort of, you know, David Silva and Kevin De Bruyne and Fernandinho and these guys who are kind of filling in as captains don't have the same impact, I don't think. And I think we're missing Vincent Kompany. I think it's a big miss.
Yeah, you know, for all the wealth of talent you have, the attacking options, you know, you maybe haven't replaced that leader in the locker room, the dressing room, someone, you know, when it's not going your way, to help you get over the line. And not just with those cracking goals that he did score, obviously that one that come against Leicester outside the box, but a packed City show. As we said, we were just talking about the season so far and obviously the Sterling Gomez debate, and next I'm delighted to say once again David Walker from Red But Never Red will be joining us on the phone.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
You are listening to the Manchester City Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with the Man City Show podcast, Nigel Rothband and Sarah Messenger. Well, we were just discussing Man City's season so far, season of highs and lows, even if it is so short. Man City already scoring 35 goals in 12 league games. Absolutely incredible. And we also spoke about the storm in the teacup, Sterling, Gomez, Trent Alexander and the England international incident. Did Southgate hang Sterling out to dry? Someone I'm sure and I'm hoping will have an opinion on it. I know he will. David Walker joins us now from Red But Never Red. David, once again, always a pleasure to have you on the show. A real favourite of mine. David, Sarah said earlier, you know, storm in a teacup, you know, it just provides more headlines. It's all been blown out of proportion. There were no other games. But what did you make of the Sterling incident?
First and foremost, good evening, everybody. I'd start off by saying it's not often that I agree with Roy Keane, but I certainly did on this one. Mm. Sterling has actually gone up in my estimation from my perspective as a City fan after this incident. He showed his passion for his club. He cared enough to stand up for himself and for City, presumably in that spat. And although he has admitted being the aggressor, he's taken responsibility for his actions, and I think that is laudable. But as I think you guys mentioned at the start of the show, there was footage at Anfield of Gomez squaring up to Sterling and sneering at him. And you also had Alexander-Arnold chucking him into the advertising board. So he'd obviously been provoked in that game. Theoretically, you should be able to say, OK, well, it's England duty. You draw a line under the league, you know, and it's nothing to do with it. But, you know, we're humans. This is a volatile game. Passions run high. But I think Southgate should have kept it in-house. Certainly should have rebuked Sterling. And this thing about Southgate consulting either the squad or some senior players, to me that sounds like an abdication of responsibility. That's not strong leadership. That's ducking the issue and saying, oh, it's a collective decision. And another thing that Gareth Southgate ducked when asked the question, would he ban Sterling if it was a must-win game? And he said, oh, it's hypothetical. He knew that Montenegro would be a walk in the park. Now, to me, that's not leadership, that's hypocrisy.
That's an interesting one, David, because I've got to say, you talk about it's rare for you to agree with Roy Keane, and I agree, but I did agree with that, and I know you was listening from the start, and it's interesting because I believe that, you know, we're talking about the Trent Alexander-Arnold pushing the back into the hoarding there, and it's interesting you say that, and I know that will be the City perspective, but I can speak from an outside perspective. He's gone up in my estimations there. You know, we criticise players when they don't do enough, and then here's someone who clearly, you know, wearing that City badge on his chest, want, you know, fighting for every ball, wanting to have the argument. This is what we want to see from our players, don't we, as fans? This is what we're crying out for.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I know you guys touched upon it again, so I don't want to be repeating everything time and time again, but it wasn't Gomez's fault that he was booed when he came on at Wembley, and it's not his fault from what Sterling said. You know, he wasn't the aggressor. But my goodness, the ridiculous media outcry and the pandering to Gomez being booed at Wembley. I think Southgate said he was devastated. Gomez was devastated. His family was upset. And when he got the injury subsequent to the Montenegro game, he couldn't play in Kosovo. So, quotes from Southgate, it would give him 2 days to clear his head. I know Sarah spoke about it earlier, I believe, but Sterling was vilified and harassed by the media, incited by what I might call the Merseyside media mafia, for years. And yet, where was the support for Sterling? Sterling has come out of the whole episode, and I'm talking about everything that's gone on since his departure from Liverpool. He's grown as a man. He's a figurehead for everything that's good in the game. And it's an absolute delight to have him at Manchester City wearing sky blue.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I'm the biggest fan of Sterling. I've spoken about that at length on this show. Another player that was in the news this week, Bernardo Silva, obviously getting his punishment now for that tweet. This is another controversial subject and debate. What have you made of it, David?
Well, first and foremost, let me say I deplore racism, as I hope, you know, most right-minded people would. I think universally people agree Bernardo is not a racist. He was naive, and it's a lesson learned. There was no intent or malice with that tweet. He deleted it after 46 minutes, presumably after somebody said, look, this is how it might look to the outside world. It's not your intention, but do something about it. Mendy wasn't offended by it. It was a joke between two good friends. It was Kick It Out who latched onto it and sort of made a big deal of it. It's political correctness gone mad, in my estimation. I mean, John Barnes said he didn't consider it racist. I know it's a cartoon character of a chocolate company who are prominent in Portugal and Spain. They produce chocolate in three different shades, plain milk and white chocolate. And I know that the cartoon character, in Bernardo's mind, and in fairness, in probably quite a few people's minds, it did bear a passing resemblance to Mendy as a child. But I can't say enough that Bernardo is not a racist. But I think what happened thereafter, it became an anti-City narrative. And I think a lot of people latched onto it because they saw it as an opportunity to punish City. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not downplaying racism in any way, shape or form. But the tweet was on September the 22nd. Bernardo admitted his mistake by October the 2nd. And yet the punishment only came out on November the 13th. So why did it take that amount of time to come to an adjudication? As a guy who watches City on a regular basis, I think this situation has affected Bernardo's form. It's dipped with the charge hanging over him. And of course, when we get to the actual punishment, it's a £50,000 fine and a one-game ban. But what's the criteria for such a punitive measure? It looks relatively arbitrary, £50,000. Where's that money going to? What's the FA going to do with that 50 grand? Are they going to put it to anti-racism training or what have you? You've got the example of Leicester's Hamza Chowdhury fined £5,000 in May for making a joke about black men. And of course, you've got UEFA handing out a paucity of a fine, £65,000, to Bulgaria for what was orchestrated racism against the England players in Sofia a couple of weeks ago. The world's gone bonkers.
David, can I just dive in here? And I agree with an awful lot of what you've just said. However, going back to the original tweet, I think everybody would accept that they're the best of mates. It was meant in jest. I don't think anybody's suggesting that Bernardo Silva is a racist. But you have to accept, in this day and age, that the tweet he sent was racist. And he has accepted that, and he has admitted that, and he's taken the punishment for it. So we have to go back to the original tweet was racist in this day and age.
Well, I'd actually disagree still, Nigel. I know that Bernardo's admitted the charge, but I don't see that he had much option given the criteria that was set before him. But for me, racism has to have malice aforethought, and it has to be done with malicious intent. And that absolutely was absent from what Bernardo did. He made a mistake. He was naive, and he was man enough to he's taking the punishment, you know, and obviously he's going to be educated face-to-face on what is and isn't acceptable in this country. But in terms of that punishment, he really should have been reprimanded and informed in what I consider to be a rather over-the-top, politically correct world, that it wasn't acceptable in this climate.
You see, mistakes were made,
but the crime does not fit the punishment.
I don't agree, and I think if we go back, you and I are probably old enough just about to remember Love Thy Neighbour with my good friend Jack Smethurst. He supports the wrong team just from just outside Manchester, but that's another issue for another day. And that today would not be allowed on television. It was acceptable. It was acceptable in those days. Lots of things have been acceptable. The black and white minstrel show, you just couldn't show that on the television anymore. And tweets like the one that he sent, you can't send anymore. It's as simple as that, David. It just doesn't fit, and it's not right. And it is racist.
Well, I would have to beg to differ on that one, Nigel. I mean, as I say, I'm not racist. I deplore racism. But that, to me, was embraced by people who went looking for something with a racist connotation, which was never there.
Just a couple of things I want to add to what David and Nigel have just said. One is that, in my view, racism, sexism, homophobia, etc., don't necessarily have to have an evil intent behind them. Quite often the issue is around unintended consequences, unconscious bias, etc., etc. So people aren't necessarily always acting in a way that was intended to be racist or sexist, but it doesn't mean that racism and sexism isn't the result of that particular behaviour or activity. And I guess the second point is that we've got two issues here. One is what Bernardo did, and secondly, the issue about whether what's the appropriate punishment. I mean, I think the £50,000 fine in light of fines for other issues is certainly questionable. I also question the one game ban. Bottom line is nobody argues he didn't mean to offend anybody. He didn't intend it to be racist. And education and an apology, if needed, would have dealt with this appropriately. So we're not really arguing that he did something inappropriate. I think even David's sort of acknowledging that maybe some education, just to make sure he understands why it was offensive, it would have been appropriate. But the reaction, I've got some sympathy with David's view, that it's been used as a bit of a stick unnecessarily.
Yeah, David, and that's one of your gripes with it, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's an over-the-top punishment. The guy, I mean, I think most people, I mean, I don't know Bernardo personally, sadly, it would be nice to. Most people acknowledge he's one of the nicest people you could wish to meet, not just in football, but on the planet. He's happy-go-lucky, he's Mr. Nice Guy, always with the proverbial smile on his face. And I think it's definitely affected him over the past few months. I mean, 7.5 weeks to arrive at a judgment. You know, why did they take that long? If he's such a nice guy, it's gonna cut him to the quick that everybody's saying these things about him. He's in the public eye for the wrong reason. So I just think there's a lack of consistency. I mean, we all know that UEFA are pathetic when it comes to racism. And yet the FA, in this instance, I would say, have been overzealous.
Yeah, David, honestly, we could speak to you a lot longer about this. Thank you so much for coming on to talk the Sterling incident and the Bernardo Silva one. Always a pleasure to have you on and hear from you. David Walker there from Red, but never Red. Please check out his tweets at the same handle as well. But what an interesting, passionate chat that was, you know, from opinions of different sides of the story and opinions we respect. But the guests, well, they say like London buses, they keep on coming. The next one, we are talking to Dave Wallace from the City Fans, and maybe we can ask him what he thinks of it as well. Still to come on the City Show.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
You are listening to the Manchester City Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with the Man City Show podcast, Nigel Rothband and Sarah Messenger. Well, what an interesting chat we just had with David Walker. He was staying true to his points, and it was a really good discussion there. David Walker from Red But Never Red. We've been talking about the season high and lows, obviously the Sterling incident with Gomez and Trent Alexander-Arnold. But we're changing pace slightly now, because I'm delighted to say Dave Wallace joined us from City Fanzine, King of the Kippax, on the phone. Dave, really, it's a real pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for giving us a little bit of your time. I wanted to ask, how did you and your wife, Sue, come about writing and editing the fanzine for over 30 years now, producing over 250 editions? How was that started for you?
Well, I was always one of these who wrote to the papers. I won competitions in the programme and stuff like that, and I like drawing football grounds for some reason. So, you know, things were bad in the late 80s. You know, we had hooliganism, we had ID cards coming in, football grounds were dilapidated, you know, and it was a tough time. And I think the fanzine started because mainly they wanted to bring the humour out of City fans and fans in general, and I think that's how it all began, really. There were lots of things to rail against, and it was time we gave the fans a voice, and that's what all the fanzines did. And you know, we started that, and we've been going for, well, we're on issue 264 now. I've been going for just 31 years. It's ridiculous, really, but you know.
And
it's
amazing, Dave, as you say, that you're still doing, because lots of fanzines have come and gone, haven't they? Of course, there's examples around the whole country where these have started, but there aren't many that have been going as long as King of the Kippax are, I don't think.
There are one or two, yeah, I think, but at the moment we swap with the Guna, the Arsenal fanzine, the Fox, the Leicester City fanzine, and Whisper It, United We Stand, the United fanzine, because you need to know what your enemy's up to, don't you, really? But there are, yeah, a lot of them have bit the dust. You know, it's tough, you know, it's not easy, you know, and I'm very lucky. I've got, my wife does the cartoons and she supports me in it, and we've got good guys, Steve and Tom, who help us sell. And, you know, like I say, it is tough. It's getting tougher by the match with the way you've got to queue up and get searched, and the time it takes to get into the ground now, and it's not easy, but it's still enjoyable for us, and we're going to carry on doing it for as long as we can, basically.
And what is the secret of that success then, Dave? Because I'm always fascinated, and we'll come on to Twitter and Facebook and all that other stuff, that you've got this instant access to information, and fans have got that, you know, they've got their smartphones with them the whole time. But we've got you guys standing out there, you and Sue and the rest of the team, come rain or shine, standing outside any ground in the country with the King of the Kippax, still selling it. What is the secret, Dave? How have you managed to maintain that for so long?
I think the point is, you know, we get this, so much happens in a month, especially at City. You know, as you know, there's so many stories that, you know, come out, and we've got problems with the media, with FFP and everything like that. So we're never short of contributions, and it's that keeps us going. It gets a bit tiring, you know, standing on the street selling it when it's raining or snowing or whatever. It's nice in the sunshine. But when you go around the supermarket, you know, the magazine shelves are stocked. So there is still an outlet for magazines. You know, we come out of it roughly once a month, and you can be a bit more measured in what you're thinking and what you're saying, rather than a knee-jerk reaction, which you often get, you know, on Twitter, etc.
And you mentioned the contributors. I mean, you've got some fantastic names sort of month in, month out. Just for those listening, just kind of help us understand some of the people that you have contributing each month.
Well, we've got Jed Isaacs, who's been Jed Sounds Off for longer than I dare to remember, and John Burfield, who's always very popular with his outspoken views. And we just get generally we've got a fixed amount of people that keep writing in. Neil Mather writes in, and Emily Brobin, you know, is our female person. You know, my wife is obviously female and keeps my feet on the ground, so I can't be as vitriolic as what I might be if I didn't have her saying, "Hey, you can't put that in" and stuff like that. So basically, we've got a lot of contributors, a lot of varied contributors. We're all getting a bit older now, but you know, our youngest is actually 15, and he does the home match reports for us. So, you know, it's a range of about 60 years. You know, Tony Petrie writes in every month, and we can rely on the regular contributors who've always got plenty to say.
Well, we've got our own female as well here on the Man City show as well. We got Sarah with me today, Dave, and I think she's got a question as well.
Yeah, Dave, I was just interested in, and it links with what you just said, that particularly with younger fans now, I mean, most of them live their entire life online. They get their information online. They'll be on all sorts of weird and wonderful websites and, of course, listening to the Man City show podcast.
Yeah.
Do they buy the fanzine, or do you find that it tends to be a kind of hardcore of the long-standing City fans who've supported it through all the time you've been producing it?
We do have younger fans buying it, but I think probably mainly it is getting to be older fans now that do... that do buy it. But I mean, the contributors range from all sorts of different ages, ranges, you know, females, males, young people, old people, and there's obviously still a niche for it because we're still selling it and people are buying it, which is the main thing.
And what about Twitter and Facebook? Do you have plans to try and sort of, I know you're not particularly active on Twitter. I've had a look today, Dave, actually, and I realise you have got a Twitter handle, but it's not particularly active. Are you just solely relying on that magazine? Are you that? What does the future look like? Are you going to stay just publishing that, or do you see different opportunities going forward?
Yeah, I've got to admit that my kids won't allow me to go on Twitter because they think I might say things that I shouldn't say. But they are biased. We do a Kindle version as well, and I will be getting on Twitter at some point when they all calm down and accept that I can say sensible things instead of non-political things and that. But that's kids for you. They keep you down to earth, don't they, really?
And what about the future then? So just talk us through sort of, I don't know, 5 years in the future. Well, obviously, City will have won 7 league titles back-to-back by then, and the Champions League as well, of course, by then, Dave. But in terms of King of the Kippax, your ambitions, your thoughts, your vision for the next 5 years, what does that look like for you?
Well, you're not getting any younger, so I don't know whether we're going to last another 5 years. But, you know, we're certainly going to keep going in the way that we are. We're doing okay, keeping our head above water. As long as people keep contributing and buying it, you know, we're going to carry on for as long as we can.
Yeah, Dave, we would like nothing more than that. Just quickly, let's turn our attentions to the game on the weekend. Chelsea on this terrific run, 6 games on the bounce, they have won. What are your thoughts going into this one, Dave?
Well, you've scared me a bit there, but I didn't know they'd won 6, you know. And I think, you know, City fans, we've got a lot of respect for Frank Lampard from what he did for us, you know, and the way he behaved himself. So I don't know, maybe it'll be better for us to play a team that want to play football and don't just want to park the bus, and you know, which is similar to what happened last year. You know, they played pretty well for the first sort of 15-20 minutes, and then we just hit them with 6. Amazing really that they've lost Hazard and yet they're doing just as well, maybe even better than what they did last year. So I'm just looking forward to the game, to be honest, you know. And it should be a good game. Nothing to worry too much about. Just enjoy the game and hope that we can get the 3 points, because we really do need to start picking up again now. We've had a load of easy games to start the season off, and we've lost at Norwich, we've lost at home to Wolves, we lost at Anfield, which was our first tough game. So we really need to get back on track. And the lads need to knuckle down and make sure that we get the 3 points.
Yeah, and hopefully they will. 5:30 kickoff on the weekend. Massive game. But Dave, thank you so much for joining us and giving us some time tonight. Dave Wallace there from the City fanzine, King of the Kippax, him and his wife Sue running that over for 30 years. Really, real pleasure to have him on the show. But we are turning our attentions to the game with Chelsea on the weekend, and what a clash that is. And Kenny Swain will be joining us to tell us his thoughts of what he's made of Chelsea this season and his predictions for the game.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
That's right. It's time for the opposition view, and what a show this has been tonight. Absolutely packed, talking of the City season, highs and lows, talking to David Walker, Dave Wallace from City Fanzine, King of the Capax, and now we get to talk to Kenny Swain, ex-Chelsea legend. What a show this has been, because this is a huge clash on the weekend. City versus Chelsea, 5:30 to kick the Premier League back off. Chelsea, 6 wins on the bounce, City needing to stay in that title race. That title hunt is on. Kenny, obviously Chelsea are going to be up for this one, but this is a big yardage marker for them, isn't it? It may be 6 wins on the bounce, but this is the real test on the weekend.
You know, that's exactly what I was in preparing for this call. I just wrote down, you know, this would be a yardstick for Chelsea.
Sorry, Kenny.
this really would be a yardstick for Chelsea now for their season. And that's 6 on the bounce, as you say, so they're in good form. Manchester City will be obviously looking at themselves now after that defeat against Liverpool, being as far behind as they are, and then they have to go and play a team that's in form. And it was serious, you know, there would be serious challenges at any stage of the season, Chelsea. So it's a really, really intriguing fixture, I think, for both clubs. But City in particular, I would say the pressure's on them to come out with a result.
We've just been talking to Dave Wallace from King of the Kippax, and he was saying how surprised he's been at the start that Chelsea have made. You know, transfer ban, no Hazard, sort of trialling the youngsters, and it's been a phenomenal, phenomenal start to the season, hasn't it? Has it surprised you as well, Kenny?
Yeah, to an extent, yes, but I think, you know, you're dealing with obviously a very, very experienced player, a very, very experienced person who's been around the game. He's always wanted a coach, I know that. He's prepared himself in terms of qualifications and experience. He's got a right-hand man there who knows the young players in particular, which was probably a major hurdle for him at the start of the season. But I think the way he's integrated them and mixed up the squad, you know, with youth and with experience, and settled down after the first, I don't know, 3 or 4 games, now they're into a really good run of form. And I think the depth of the squad they've got has probably surprised people, because they still have some world-class players. Chelsea and Manchester City, Liverpool and others should not ever doubt that.
And do you expect to see that kind of aggressive pressing game that we've seen as well? Do you think they'll come to the Etihad and carry on playing that sort of game, or do you see a slightly different tactic from Lampard at the weekend?
I would think probably a slightly different tactic. I think we've all agreed and seen enough of Manchester City over the last couple of years. And when you look at the game against Liverpool on Saturday, you know, the possession, you know, there's no team in the Premier League who can keep possession like Manchester City. Absolutely nobody can live with them. And the fact that they've got, is it 22 goal difference, which is, you know, again, is phenomenal for those top 4 or 5 clubs. You know, they're way ahead of everybody there with that. Which just shows you that, you know, they do enjoy possession. So Chelsea are going to have to possibly concede, you know, a little bit of ground and concede some time when they're on the ball. But Chelsea, you know, once they get playing, and, you know, the thing that's impressive about Tammy Abraham, is he runs defences to death. He just runs in behind. He keeps making those long, gangly leg runs that he does. He puts defenders under pressure all the time. And if there is an Achilles heel with Manchester City, it's probably in their central defence.
Yeah, well, I wonder who will be playing at centre defence. It could be anybody. In fact, have you got your boots, Kenny? You might get a game yourself if we get pick up any more injuries. City have scored 35 goals in 12 league games. And do you think, will Chelsea's young defence cope with that? Do you think that firepower that City have got, is that their Achilles heel, do you think, potentially?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it'll be a big test for the for the Chelsea defence as well. But that's why I think that, you know, tactically they might just be a little bit different. You know, I think they might have to get a little bit more condensed and compact, you know, in the final third of the field, knowing that Manchester City are going to have an awful lot of possession, and then do what they do well. You know, they can counter, which I would expect them to try and do.
And you've mentioned Tammy Abraham. Obviously, there are a number of other youngsters. You just want to talk us through the sort of the talent that Chelsea are going to have on show at the weekend. Who are the other youngsters who have particularly shone for you and who City should be on the lookout for?
Well, I mean, certainly Mason Mount, with the way he's been performing. And I remember selecting him for an England under-16 training camp and thinking, at the end of that training camp that he was possibly, at that point, you know, he was possibly the best talent in terms of potential for the future. And he's heading that way. He's, you know, he's up there now with some of the best, if not the best, young player in England right now. Tammy, as you know, Hudson-Odoi. I mean, it's a pretty phenomenal rise to international sort of selection and being in favour with Gareth Southgate, you know, with the England squad at the moment. And I think, you know, to be in that position when you've only had, you know, little exposure in the Premier League is quite frightening, really. But that's, I think that's a testament to Chelsea's, you know, recruitment, you know, policy, their recruitment drive, and certainly in their academy. You know, I think they've done, you know, absolute wonders there over the years, and consistently as well. Always brought in really, really top talent in terms of, you know, English players.
Yeah, and obviously now Frank Lampard at the helm. Jody Morris back there as well, apparently, who's a brilliant coach and working with those youngsters in the academy. But we mentioned Chelsea on a run of six games that they've won. They're up there. They find themselves back in the top four. This is a big clash for both. And we mentioned that this is, you know, the yardstick, the yardage marker for Chelsea. I think it's a challenge that Frank Lampard embraces. He doesn't seem to be one that shies away from it. You know, even if they go on to lose the game, he wants to know where his young Chelsea side are at. With that in mind, Kenny, what is your score prediction for the weekend?
I think, you know, if Chelsea go there and they get themselves a draw, they'll be more than happy with that. I think, you know, to expect Chelsea to go up there and turn Manchester City over playing their game on their own soil might be a little bit much to expect. However, you know, that result, you know, a draw for Manchester City, they won't be happy with that, whoever they're playing, but they've got to play a team who's really in form. So I would think, you know, a 1-1 draw would be a fantastic result for Chelsea. And anything more than that would obviously be in dreamland.
Kenny, yeah, you're sitting on the fence there slightly, Kenny. No, I'm only joking, but it will be a big game on the weekend. But thank you for giving us a little bit of your time. Chelsea legend there, Kenny Swain. He's saying if Chelsea can get a point on the weekend, they'll take that. I don't think City will want to take that. They'll be going for the three, of course. Nigel, how do you think the game will play out?
Well, as I sort of said to Kenny, I think potentially where City can dominate is that it is a very, very young defence that Chelsea have got. I can see City will be determined to bounce back from the defeat at Anfield. And I think we'll be too strong for them on the day. And I'm going 3-1 City.
3-1 City, just the way that City would want to start the next run of fixtures, Sarah, coming off that international break. It's a big one. Chelsea do have those six games, but Nigel's going 3-1. Do you think the game will play out like that also?
I think it'll be a reasonably tight game, actually. We haven't got time to go into it. I think one or two of the Chelsea youngsters are overrated. Hudson-Odoi.
Yep, and?
I think he's overrated. I actually think Tammy Abraham is getting too much glowing press at the moment. I mean, no, not disputing he's had a great start to the season. I'm not sure I think he's a clinical striker. But log that one. Log that one. We'll come back to it another day. But I look, the way City's defence is playing at the moment, Chelsea are good enough to score against them. So
they do concede though, Chelsea. Clean sheets have been a real trouble for them.
I think it'll be 2-1 City.
2-1 City. And look, we know what Chelsea bring, but the 3 points is just so early on. We said so much football to play, Nigel, but 3 points is massive, isn't it, Sarah, here?
We've got to get the 3 points. I mean, well, we have if we're serious about having any chance of winning the title. And also just to get our confidence ahead of what is a pretty tough run of games now running up to Christmas. So we need to start with a win.
And you think City can expose them, really? Maybe everyone, because of those six wins on the bounce, Chelsea is slightly being overestimated at the minute?
I don't want to take credit away. They've had a great run. And they play nice football, so they didn't deserve to lose at Old Trafford at the first game of the season. They played brilliantly there for 60 minutes. So I'm not saying that they're not a decent team, and I think Lampard's done a brilliant job considering some of the disadvantages he was dealt. But City are more than capable of beating Chelsea, and they should beat them.
And obviously, very quickly, Nigel, City do have that Frank Lampard connection, don't they?
We do. I mean, born and bred Mancunian, obviously, city legend. You know, we love him. He was born just in Ardwick, you know, just outside the city centre. Now, listen, he did a fantastic job for us. And
it's hard to dislike him, isn't it?
It is. And, yeah, it's, you know, it's absolute Chelsea legend. We know that. And it can't be easy, sort of, having a career that he had at Chelsea, scoring all those goals and the whole dynasty and everything he achieved there, to go to another club and do what he did with us and you know, won a Premier League title and just was absolutely fantastic. So I think he handled himself brilliantly, and he'll be welcomed back. I think he'll be welcomed back very warmly by the City fans at the weekend.
Well, that was what I was going to ask. I think he will get a good reception. But what a show this has been, the Manchester City Fan Show, right here on Love Sport Radio. And next week you can join us at the same time as you can every week, Monday, 9 o'clock till 10, where we will be talking everything from the fallout from that game as City face Chelsea, 5:30 this weekend. I've been Charlie Hawkins. This has been Nigel Rothband and Sarah Messenger of the City Fan Show, right here on Love Sport Radio.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.